Welcome to Tech and Law Insights, Episode 4, hosted by Lurie.ai. This is our sub-podcast, Episode Number 1, part of Visionary Ventures. Today, our guest is Dean, CEO and visionary behind Lurie. He's a 2L at UCLA Law School and a multifaceted entrepreneur. Thanks for agreeing to be a guest, Dean.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Rupa.
Awesome. Yeah, Dean, I'm excited to talk about your journey. It spans from founding a nonprofit that helps victims of Agent Orange to recently expanding your Muay Thai kickboxing studio to a new location in Santa Monica. So let me start with your first question, digging a little bit deeper into your inspiring story and entrepreneurial spirit. So Dean, what inspired you to start Lurie while you're concurrently pursuing your law degree at UCLA?
It's a great question. When I first got to UCLA Law, a lot of my entrepreneurial and stock trader friends were questioning my judgment, putting all this money into a law degree when AI is on the horizon, potentially replacing everyone's jobs. Why am I going to put all this effort into law? Mm-hmm. Well, the reason was because I wanted to do something like this. I saw this trend and I knew that it was going to change the world. So I always wanted to learn kind of the back end of business. And like when I got my MBA, I wasn't really satisfied with that, but I did start to realize right away that law is kind of the back end of everything. And so ChatGPT came out about 8 months before I started law school. I had already been accepted into UCLA. I was planning to study crypto, but as soon as ChatGPT came out, I was a very early adopter and I started using it for pretty much everything from writing emails to putting contracts together to analyzing documents and, you know, bouncing ideas off of it. And it came to the point, you know, as an entrepreneur, I see trends. I just felt like I had to get in on this trend because it was so early. And really, no one had touched the legal industry yet other than like Google with Harvey. And so I realized like, you know, the school is not going to teach us how to use AI. So we're going to have to prepare for this revolution ourselves. But rather than prepare for this revolution, I was uniquely situated to be a part of it and catalyze the revolution. So I started talking, you know, to the UCLA administration. They didn't really show any interest in AI. And so I moved to the students, and that's where I met Vanessa and you and Aditya and found like-minded, you know, entrepreneurial folks who wanted to make a change and wanted to, you know, capitalize on this revolution that's happening. And that's kind of how Lurie was born.
Yeah, I remember when ChatGPT came out as well, and I remember myself being a little bit resistant to using it ubiquitously in my work, but I will say I've completely done a 180 on that, especially since meeting you. Turning a little bit away from your law school experiences and legal technology work, I just want to talk a little bit first about your nonprofit, ANFOOC International, where you work with Agent Orange victims. So how has this experience shaped your approach to business, generally speaking?
It's really given me kind of a passion to keep me going with the intent of making a difference and helping people that are less fortunate. You know, I want to be successful and I do want to make improvements to the world. And I want to do that with Lurie and other businesses that I have started, even my kickboxing gym. You know, I want to improve the community. But this is really kind of a project that gives me, you know, purpose. No one really, you know, I went to Vietnam and met these people myself and doing research, you know, they don't get any help. No one's really ever told their story. So it kind of gives me purpose in my life while I really, it like allows me to feel good about focusing on making money. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to make any money. I don't want to make money. Every cent that's given to ANFOOC goes to the victims. We're producing a documentary this year called Orange Tears that is basically documents my last visit to Vietnam. We went around to several families of Agent Orange victims and gave them donations and allowed them to share their story. So that'll be coming out hopefully by the end of the year. And yeah, like I said, you know, if you have something like this that really gives you purpose, kind of like how law firms do pro bono work, right, to justify how much they charge their clients, they'll do some pro bono cases. It's kind of a similar concept. You know, I have this nonprofit. I'm never letting go of this of this cause, because I feel like I'm one of the only people in the world that's caring about these individuals in Vietnam. And so holding on to that allows me to feel good about, you know, focusing on for-profit ventures.
That's really inspiring, Dean. I know you're a fighter, and I want to talk a little bit about your Muay Thai kickboxing studio and its new location in Santa Monica. What motivated you to enter the fitness industry?
The reason I started training Muay Thai was because I was at a party in college and somebody touched my girlfriend inappropriately. And so I got upset and my girlfriend got involved and basically humiliated me in front of everyone there and said, "Dean, shut your mouth because you're going to get beat up if you don't." And the next day I started signed up for martial arts classes and initially started with Kung Fu and then found Muay Thai. And wow. I wasn't very athletic growing up. I tried swimming, I tried tennis. I was a soccer player, but I was not good. But when I started doing Muay Thai, I was good at it. I started sparring early and then I started sparring with my coaches and I could hang with my coaches. And then I was, you know, I never really thought I would be a fighter until a friend of mine said, "Hey, when are you gonna fight? You're training all the time." And I said, "I don't think I was gonna fight." And he said, "Well, do you think that your trainers would put all this time into you if they knew you didn't want to fight?" And then I started thinking about it, you know, wanted to test my skills and actually lost my first fight. But then, you know, that turned into my main focus of my life for 15 years. You know, I loved it. I was obsessed with Muay Thai and martial arts, traveling to Thailand, fighting in Thailand. I even fought for a stadium belt back in 2022. My last fight was February 2024. So pretty recent, but yeah, I'm pretty much retired now, but you know, it kind of was just coincidental, serendipitous. I fell in love with Muay Thai. I didn't know I'd be good at it. And I was.
And the new location for Santa Monica Striking, your kickbox studio, it's an exciting development. What unique features does this new location offer?
Yeah, it's actually amazing. I can't believe we got this spot. So we are two blocks from the beach in Santa Monica. So it's going to we're going to be able to do team runs to the beach and do some beach workouts and then finish at the gym. Or, you know, you can go and get a really good training session in, go all, be all sweaty and then just go right to the beach and jump in the ocean. And we have a shower at the new spot. So you can shower there. It's way bigger, right across the street from the Santa Monica High School soccer field. So we'll have a lot more exposure. And, you know, above all that, my coach is Lance Dixon, is one of the best coaches I've ever seen. He was a pro fighter for years, fought in Thailand. And so we really offer some of the best training in Los Angeles at my gym. And now that we have this new location, I'm really excited to see what the future holds.
And so how do you manage your legal education and law studies with managing multiple businesses, Dean?
Yeah, so this is where I think you probably don't follow my advice on this, but I really don't sleep much because I come home from school and then I have back-to-back meetings for Lori, and then I don't start my homework until 10:30, and law school homework isn't finished in an hour. It's usually 3 to 4 hours of reading and briefing cases. So I usually start around 10 and fall asleep around 2 or 3, and then wake up early, check my emails, respond to emails from Lori, and then do more reading and then go to class all day. So it's very, very difficult. For someone who wants to kind of do multiple projects like that, you have to find high performing, like-minded people that you can partner with to help you manage things. So for example, I'm not really hands-on at my gym because I have a team. I did help with the move and I do help when we have meetings, but you know, I trust Lance and I trust my partner Oscar, and you know, they're kind of running things there. Really, if you want to have multiple businesses and do this in law school, again, I wouldn't recommend this for anyone, but it's just literally a constant grind. You have to be able to shift from school to business and then back to school. And then you have to be able to put fires out on multiple fronts at any time. So it's, you know, a lot of pressure and a lot of stress, but I've been through a lot. You know, you got to have perseverance. You have to believe in yourself. And That's what I do. So it's tough, but you just have to keep grinding. And honestly, the best advice is just never give up. Don't give up on anything. Don't give up on your projects. If you believe in them, you know, a lot of people say pick one thing and focus on it. I've never adhered to that advice, and I don't believe in it. I'd rather see all of my projects succeed, and I believe that they can.
You're such a visionary, Dean, in this way. What is your vision for Lurie's future? Where do you see the company in 5 years?
So I think in 5 years, I really think that society and professionalism as a whole is going to be completely upended. I see these trends, and I, you know, growing up, even as a child, like I've seen trends, and I've seen things coming before they happen. I really think that, like 50% or more of the entire workspace is going to be out of work. And I think that society is going to have to shift to adapt to this new level of unemployment, because, you know, I don't think slowing down the progress of AI is in the best interest of society. I think AI should be promoted and expanded, because in the end, it really is actually a supplement to humans, and it does actually allow us to be more productive and more creative and do more with our time. So, you know, artificially stopping the progress so that people keep their jobs, it, to me, just is not ideal. So for Lurie, you know, we're already making waves in the legal industry. We're already, you know, having students use our tools to brief cases, but I see Lurie as one of the catalysts to the change in the legal industry. I see us creating tools. I mean, we already have several tools under development that are very attractive to several attorneys that we've presented them to, that would essentially cut the amount of time and effort that they need to put into their job down by like 80%. And you know, if it's not Lurie, it's going to be someone else. So I believe that it can be Lurie, and I believe that, you know, we can be one of these biggest catalysts in this change in this sector, and ideally expand to other sectors, because we have a great development team that's ready to go and build out tools as we come up with them.
That's really interesting. And just let me understand what you're saying about these efficiency gains. And do you think AI could structurally change the legal space beyond just being an efficiency enabler within the status quo? For example, if attorneys could have multiple specialties in their junior years in the workforce, or even introducing a new type of role for prompt engineers who work alongside paralegals to accelerate case research?
Yeah, I think it's going to go even beyond that. Sure. You know, you see things like Optimus with Tesla and robots being created and, you know, autonomous driving. I think within 5 years, we'll see non-human counsel representing people in cases. I know that sounds crazy and people think that'll never happen, but I do think it will happen. Like I can imagine an AI that hears people's cases and then determines a verdict, like as a judge would do, or even proposes a verdict to a judge. I've been saying this since ChatGPT-3 came out. Like, why would a firm partner hire the same amount of first-year associates to draft initial drafts of documents when they can just have an AI agent do it in a second? Why would you pay $300 an hour? It doesn't make sense. I'm very confident that this is going to happen. And so, yeah, I mean, paralegals, research, even litigation, I see AI playing a role in all of it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So are you saying with respect to litigation, AI can democratize high stakes litigation by enabling fractional legal analytics services, and also allowing solo practitioners to compete with large firms as well through predictive tools? Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that's like exactly on point. I think that AI, like I think that the smaller and medium-sized firms are going to be way quicker to adapt and adopt AI tools. I think the big firms want to continue charging you know, lots of billable hours. I don't think they want to change their ways. I think they have their template set for their legal documents, and they want to keep doing things the way they've been doing them. And I do think that this is going to be an opportunity for the smaller and more medium-sized firms to kind of become more competitive. But it goes beyond just the firms. At Lori, we're really trying to increase access to justice or democratize access to justice. So not just democratize litigation, but democratize, you know, access to legal services that traditionally are, you know, out of people's price range. For example, you know, if someone robs you and you know who it is, and you know you don't have enough money to afford a lawyer, what do you do? Well, now with Lori's tools, you can use a tool, and you know, we're not just building tools, we're also building out a marketplace that will connect people with attorneys. So, you know, we're definitely keeping our hands clean from providing any legal advice, but we are providing tools for people who aren't attorneys to kind of at least shape their initial documents to get an idea of what they need to do or what kind of document they need to file, and then connect them with attorneys so that they do have representation.
And with this increase in access to justice powered by Lurie products, do you think other firms will follow suit? Do you think AI will spur kind of a legal productization movement where firms can sell scalable AI-powered compliance modules and tools instead of billable hour services?
I don't think that firms are going to sell AI-powered modules, but I do think that billable hours will be reduced significantly. I think that, you know, traditional pricing standards for attorneys and traditional estimates of time for how long it takes to make documents are going to be drastically reduced. I don't think that we're going to be replacing attorneys anytime soon, but I do think that firms that do adopt AI are going to advertise that, you know, they can do your work for you in much less time than it would take a traditional lawyer.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you are saying the cost prohibitive nature of legal services will definitely change for the better, and Lurie is leading this wave.
Yeah, I mean, look, the legal profession is protected by the bar. You know, they don't want to allow non-lawyers to practice, but AI is not a non-lawyer. AI is a tool, and preventing people from using a tool that could save them thousands of dollars is it's not in the best interest of society. You know, what we're trying to do is the opposite. We're trying to give these people the ability to at least have some type of representation or some idea of what a legal document would look like. Because traditionally, people that can't afford lawyers have no idea what a complaint is. And now if they use our tools, they will.
That is truly amazing. And it's just been so exciting to help you and the rest of our team kind of build out your vision for these tools for laymen. And my final question for you today, Dean, is just going back to the impact of a legal education and its importance. Is a legal education important, and has it influenced your approach to entrepreneurship?
I mean, law school is the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life. And, you know, I fought stadium champions in Thailand. I would do that 100 times before doing law school again. However, as I said before, law is the back end of the world. You can go to business school and try to understand how business works, and you're going to go and learn how to network and learn how to be a middle-level management person. And, you know, maybe if you go to a really good school, you'll learn accounting and finance well. But other than that, it's really not going to teach you how business works. But if you go to law school, even non-corporate law classes like contracts, torts, civil procedure, you learn the back end of how things work, which includes business, And then you take business associations and you learned how businesses are formed and how they're treated by the law and how they're taxed differently and how different states allow different entities to exist. And I don't want to diminish MBA school, but I've learned more in a year of law school than I have in my whole MBA program about, you know, being, how to be successful and how to be a valuable partner. You know, you could only teach networking and marketing and ethics so much, but there's an unlimited amount. There's an unlimited body of knowledge of law. Like, you can study law for the rest of your life and still not know about certain doctrinal things. That's why I've developed such a reverence for judges. They're experts in every facet of the law. Like them or not, you know, because some judges are controversial, they have to be brilliant. You can't get through law school and then have this ubiquitous understanding of every type of law without being brilliant. I'm convinced. Like, you really can't be a dumb judge. So bringing it back, legal education has shaped me as an entrepreneur because it taught me about the back end of everything. And I'm so hungry. Like, I'm still in law school now. I'm going to keep learning as much as I possibly can. I want to learn about intellectual property. I want to learn about corporate law. I want to learn about securities regulation. We have a whole program dedicated to AI law now, and I'm deep in the throes of that. You know, it's stressful. It's tons of work. It definitely takes some time away from Lori, but at the same time, it's making me a better partner and it's making me a better CEO for Lori. And also just being connected to the legal industry is beneficial for the company. So it's a lot of time. It's a lot of stress. But, you know, for people that are hungry for knowledge and that want to understand the world, and I think most entrepreneurs should feel that way, I would say that law school is probably the best education you can get if you want to be an entrepreneur.
That is so inspiring, Dean. You are truly a multifaceted entrepreneur, from law school to business leadership and nonprofit work, fitness entrepreneurship. I think your journey is really a testament to the power of vision and determination. So thank you so much, Dean, for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you for having me, Rupa. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I definitely hope to have you back on this podcast down the line to give us more insights and keep us updated on Lurie and Anne Fuch and Santa Monica striking. To our listeners, remember that with passion and perseverance, you too can make a difference in multiple arenas. This is Rupa signing off from Tech and Law Insights, our first sub-podcast episode, Visionary Ventures. Until next time, keep innovating and inspiring.